eat.
Oh, so good.
Drink. Talk. Rick Redding and Steve Coombs serve up savory conversations about Louisville's world-famous restaurant food and drink scene. The wine is uncorked, the bourbon neat, the apps are on the table. Here comes the main course.
Welcome to Eat, Drink, Talk, where we discuss everything happening in the Louisville restaurant and bar scene and occasionally beyond. I'm your host, Steve Coombs, and I'm with my co-host, Rick Redding. How are you, sir?
Doing great. I like the beyond part. That's always fun.
It kind of covers everything in case you missed something.
A lot of stuff.
Well, we went beyond.
We got a lot of stuff to talk about.
We do. We have multiple sheets.
Fun.
Multiple sheets of notes today, but don't let that concern you that we're just going to wind on. And
damn, Steve, I was telling people we do this without notes. Oh, shit.
Well, yeah, I guess you got to scratch that part of your script, you know. But before we forget, we would definitely want to thank our sponsor, the Eye Care Institute. Specialists in eye care issues such as surgical procedures for cataracts, glaucoma, and LASIK, but also routine eye exams, which both you and I bet need, right?
I have had mine done at Eye Care Institute.
Oh,
and
you're a step ahead.
A very satisfied customer.
What a loyal patron you are.
That really is. They were great to me down there. I really really enjoyed the service and very professional. So it's 502-589-1500 if you want to schedule an appointment.
1536 Story Avenue if you want to go down there.
Yeah.
You're going to plug that into your GPS.
You used to pay your cable bill there, but it's a much better looking building now.
Fantastic. We were both discussing this morning a WFPL.org article done by writer Ashley Stevens. I imagine there's an audio piece to back it up, too. But it's centered on local and independent restaurants opening and closing and the pace of all that and how demanding it is. And as we've talked about here for a long time, you know, there's too many restaurants and too few people to patronize those particular restaurants.
Well, we're trying to get to all of them, and even us who... It's our business to do it. I can't get to all of them.
I don't even think that people can afford to get to all of them.
To
all of them.
But it's good to have. It's good to live in a city that has that many choices. I mean, anybody that's lived in a little town with a you know, one diner on the corner, or even a smaller city than Louisville, I think we're very fortunate.
We are. I think the consumer's fortunate, but I think the gist of the article was that the operators aren't terribly fortunate for this because they're competing so hardly. They're competing to get that slice of the pie that continues to get smaller and smaller with every opening.
Yeah. Well, that is. But competition, as we know, in all aspects of life is good, right? And so, you know, the winner, the ones that operate best will survive.
Right. The strong will survive. It's a lot of good operators in that article. Anthony Lamas, Ryan Rogers. If you don't know their restaurants, that's Ceviche, Royals, Feast Barbecue.
They had Dallas McGarity.
Dallas McGarity
in there, and
Fat Lamb.
Speaking of which, Fat Lamb's getting ready to open, right?
Yeah,
very soon.
Absolutely. So while we're reading about all these articles about restaurants opening, I was looking at a list that's coming up in the next issue of Food and Dining Magazine, and I just can't believe there are 13 that are going to open from now in October to December. I mean, places like the Portage House, which we touched on last week with our podcast, Fat Lamb, Pearl Street Tap House in Indiana, Kim and Bab Korean Bistro, which sounds fantastic to me.
Yeah, that's it's another type of restaurant. It probably isn't a Korean competition over there in New Albany.
So. Not that I'm aware of. Uh-uh.
So yeah, this all looks good. Even something at the airport, a Book and Bourbon Southern Kitchen.
100 bourbons on the wall, apparently.
Yeah, well, you know, that'll be an airport place. So you know. For whatever that is, but
yeah, I mean, don't you go straight to your gate when you go to the airport, and when you get your bags, you're out of there. I mean, if somebody has a layover there.
Layover. Not many people have layovers in Louisville, but you know, when I have layovers in other cities, I'm always looking for, you know, some sort of place. So
me
I'm
too.
Sure that'll be a cool place.
Kohl's, the third Kohl's Artisan Pizza, will be in
Kohl's.
The airport.
I
do too.
It's good, and I don't even recognize this rock thing, Steve. You probably know about it, though.
Yeah, well, it's an Italian restaurant, and it's been going on. Its preparation to open has been going on Bardstown Road for quite some time. It's a couple doors down from where Rue was in the old Butterfly Garden.
Okay.
But it's supposedly an authentic Italian restaurant, so it'll be interesting. The Eagle, which you've talked to somebody about recently?
Yeah, a friend of mine, the esteemed professor at U of L, John Gilderblum, told me about going up to Cincinnati for a show and ended up over there at the Eagle, and he said, I'm not a Southern food guy, but this was fantastic. And so,
may God forgive him for not liking Southern food.
Yeah, exactly. But maybe he likes it now. He really liked the Eagle, and so that was really cool.
Well, Martin's Barbecue joint is going to open in the old Springhurst Country Club sometime. I've been told in the next few weeks.
Indian Springs.
Thank you. Which is in Springhurst. Yeah. Or across from Springhurst.
It's across from Springhurst. I played that course back when it was a golf course. And you know, it must be weird for residents there because the course basically shut down. So they've got a fairway in their backyard that's no longer maintained.
Well, nobody like me hitting balls against their roofs and windows and such like that.
Yeah, so the greens have gone to crap, but you got a lot of free green space, I guess, over there. But I remember the clubhouse as a clubhouse, and I'm really anxious to see. I understand the new barbecue place has, what do you say, something in the
actual smoking pit is in the middle of the restaurant, and it'll be doing whole hogs there. So vegetarians, kind of prepare yourself if you don't want to see that.
To avoid it.
But that's how the sausage is smoked, as it were.
Yeah. We just got back from lunch and at a place where you can really see what's going on.
The Red Hog Butcher.
Red Hog.
Absolutely. They had a full case of meats that, you know, some of which they prepare on site. I guess all their sausages are done on site. Their hot dogs, chorizo, Polish sausages. They had, you know, beef from Black Hawk Farms. I can't recall the pork and the poultry producers, but all these are local. And every single one of these producers and the slaughterhouses are vetted by Bob Hancock, who is the owner of the concept, and just to make sure that they treat their animals humanely right until the point of slaughter.
Yeah. It's kind of I've never seen this before. You may have, but, on the labeling on the meats, they tell you what farm it came from.
Yeah, absolutely. So. I think it's cool. We sat and had lunch, which we'll talk about in just a second here, but it is a cool space. The cafe is only open on Thursdays through Saturdays right now, and that's partly because there's a shortage of restaurant staff. Surprise. And
talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, and partly because Bob Hancock will only have people who are good. It's going to work for him. So I would imagine they are vetted as well.
So if you're good and you need a job, I'd say go down there. But, we went and took pictures and looked at the space. And like we talked about a few weeks ago, it's an outstanding place to hang out.
And photos will be on Eat Drink Talk.
There you go.
Our Facebook page, that is, I should say. And speaking of incredibly talented people, Kentucky now has its first woman master distiller in Pam Heilman at Michter's. Yay, Pam.
Wow. Way to go. And she just got under the wire, I guess. Now, how is this? You tell me how this squares with Marianne Barnes being at Castle Key.
Well, Marianne Barnes was the first to actually have the title, but Marianne and Castle Key have not produced any liquor yet. So it's unofficial, but when you talk to people in the booze circles, that they just say, when you've turned the dials and people are drinking your whiskey, you're
then
a distiller. Then it counts. Pam, even before she came to Michter's back in 2014, I believe, she ran the Booker No Distillery, which nobody gets to see. It's not a tourist distillery, but it's in Boston, Kentucky, not far from Claremont, where Jim Beam's headquarters are. And it is the largest bourbon distillery in the world. So this diminutive lady, she's about 5'2", maybe. She ran the biggest bourbon distillery in the world, and now she's at Michter's, and she officially, by title and in role, is master distiller.
Okay, so clarify for me the distinction here. She ran the other distillery, but she wasn't the master distiller there.
Right. The master distiller technically is Fred No, who is son of Booker No. And so he gets that title. The master distiller also reaches out and has a role in maturation and marketing. It's a very complex role, but they have divided that role up at Michter's, and Andrea Wilson will be taking on the maturation role, meaning whatever's happening in the barrels, she's checking it out.
Well, that sounds cool. I mean, I certainly have to get me some Michter's and try it. I hope you're going to schedule an interview with her.
Absolutely.
So we can hear from
her. I'm going to see her in a couple of days on business, and I'm going to post her up and do the podcast.
All right. That'll be awesome. You got another story about love.
Love is in the air. Real quick, just because some really cool chefs in this town just got married, one of which is Annie Petrie, the chef, executive chef at DECA, married the general manager at DECA, Nathaniel Snyder. That was a couple of weeks ago or maybe last week. And Laurent Gérolie, who is the chef at Chard, just married his longtime girlfriend, Katie. I can't recall Katie's last name, but they've been dating forever.
Wow.
Thank you. Finally pulled it off.
Laurent Gérolie.
He used to be the executive chef at the Brown Hotel. Great guy. Had gone off to Vermont for a few years to run a resort there and came back because he loves Kentucky. The Canadian.
I bet because he loves Katie, too.
I would have met. Well, she traveled with him.
Okay.
She went as well.
Well, they both love Louisville and Kentucky.
Well, and speaking of people who moved here, that's your first guest.
Oh yeah, what they call segue there. My good buddy Mike Spurlock runs a great operation out in J-Town. It's called Louie Louie's. He came here from Detroit, where he grew up eating Detroit style pizza from a place called Buddy's. My girlfriend Paula
tells
me.
Absolutely, Buddy's is a great Detroit style icon.
But, you know, Mike's been out there about 4 or 5 years at Louie Louie's. It's the old Ferd Grassani's. Mm-hmm. People know that place. And he's a really innovative guy. And he's also a musician. He's in the band that plays on Thursday nights. I got to get you out
there. At his own place. Nice.
I got to get you out there. We talk about it in the interview. It's a house band. It's a really cool thing every Thursday night out there. And and one other thing we talk about in the interview is – he opened a little spot right on Bardstown Road. You know about that?
I know about that. And as much as
up all night.
Yeah, and as much as I walk that strip, I never even notice where it is. I swear.
Well, it's right next to O'Shea's.
Okay.
Up, out from town from O'Shea's.
And okay, it's to the left.
It's just a walk.
It's a window.
Yeah. It's a window, and he and Mike will tell you about the hot dogs and all the stuff. They don't serve pizza there, but they serve a lot of good street food.
So. Which, you know, given that I'm in bed by 10 on most nights, that's probably why I have not.
Yeah. You're in bed before they open. I don't think they open until like 11 or 12. So
when their lights are on, I'm going to bed. Is that the way it works?
That's right. But anyway, I think you'll find this interview fascinating. Mike's got a lot of great ideas and certainly is trying to build business out in J-Town. And he talks about some of the things that he thinks we could do. And J-Town could be the next, the next hot spot in town, according to Mike. So we'll see. I hope so, since I live out there. But I think you'll enjoy the interview. And I guess, Steve, we'll be back right after that.
Rick Redding has his ear to the ground on Louisville news, issues, and media. Get a new episode every Thursday at Louisville.am.
And here we are. Eat, Drink, Talk is at one of my favorite places, Louie Louie's in J-Town. I'm with Mike Spurlock. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, this is a place I come all the time because I'm usually here listening to music. The great music that you are even a part of, the band. Tell me the history of that. It just fascinates me that you're so successful with music here.
Well, thank you. I'm a musician, have been, since I was 13 years old. And, when my partners and I decided to open a restaurant, we actually didn't even contemplate doing music here. But it just happened that there were some opportunities to do some music. And one of my partners actually had the idea that, hey, why don't we do a jam? And let's talk to a couple of different musician friends of ours and see if they might help us organize it. And the one that that came to mind was Jeff Raymond, who is a phenomenal keyboard player, singer, composer. He's just a great all-around musician. And we asked him to call some of his friends. We'd call our friends and come out and put together what we called for a couple of years, J-Boys Jam. And this is every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. It's our busiest night of the week. We routinely sell out tables, so if you're thinking about coming, make a reservation early.
I've experienced that. Yeah. I had to sit in the back.
Hate to do that to people, but I've only got so many seats. But Louisville's absolute top musicians. I mean, it's rock and roll royalty that comes in here every Thursday night. I never know exactly who.
Yeah.
All I know is it's going to be great.
Well, it's always fun because, you might be sitting in the crowd and the guy next to you goes up and the next minute he's up on stage singing a song you know. And so
you got it.
It's a really cool aspect of this place. Tell me a little bit more about – now, Louie Louie's, you brought this whole Detroit-style pizza to town. Tell me a little bit of the history of how this happened.
Well, I grew up in Detroit as a kid. I grew up eating the style of pizza that we're trying to make famous down here as a kid. And I was always frustrated when we moved here that you could never get it. You couldn't get anything that really was even close. I mean, there's some pizzas that look like Detroit-style pizza, but they don't use the same baking techniques and the same cheese and other techniques. So I started making this pizza at home. I started doing it a number of years ago, actually, for a friend of mine who loved Detroit-style pizza. And, you know, he was sick, and that was really the only thing that that he could eat when he was going through what he was going through. It was the only thing that tasted good to him.
Yeah, wow.
And so, you know, so that's what motivated me to, you know, to come up with my own recipe. And, you know, I got, I mean, according to Sean Randazzo, who's world champion pizza maker, 2012 International Pizza Challenge, my pizza's pretty damn good. His is great, too.
Well, I'll vouch for that, too. But for people that have been in Louisville a long time, you're in the old Ferd Grisani's that everybody's familiar with out here in J-Town. And it seems like an ideal facility for
you're doing. It's a great facility. The Grisanti's family ran a fine dining Italian restaurant here for 35 years, from 1973 until a few years ago when it closed. And, you know, it's right up the street from where a couple of my partners and I live, and so it was kind of convenient. And, you know, frankly, J-Town needed something like this. Yeah. So if it wasn't going to be us, it was going to be somebody, but it might as well have been us.
Yeah. Well, I certainly it's been a big hit. How many years have you been here now?
Well, we're in our fourth year.
Fourth year.
Yeah.
And but certainly I love the fact every time I talk to you, you seem to have something new going on, and certainly you're an entrepreneur.
Always have something new going on.
Yeah, yeah. This place down in the Highlands, you opened up a couple of years ago.
Well, it was actually last summer, a year ago August. And, you know, we call it Louie's Up All Night. So typically on Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday nights, we open about midnight to 4 a.m. And we do Detroit-style Coney Island hot dogs, which, again, is something that you don't find down here. But it's a great tasting version of a Coney dog. It's got, you know, a white bun, a hot dog, our own chili, which is inspired by some of the places that have been doing it for 100 years in downtown Detroit. But it is our own recipe, and you put chopped white onions and mustard on it, and there's just nothing like it.
It's the bomb. Okay.
You know, we're doing street tacos. We've got some breakfast sandwiches down there now, nachos, and just, you know, other walking around food that we serve through the window there at 960 Baxter.
Wow. Well, it seems an unlikely idea that now makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Certainly something's going on. So you were telling me about being contacted that in your quest to make Detroit-style pizza more popular, I guess. You've been contacted by a Food Network
reporter or writer contacted me actually probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And so we've been talking, and I sent her some high-res pictures of our pizza over the weekend, and she and I had, you know, a long conversation, probably a good 45 minutes to an hour this past early this week. And she's originally from Detroit, but she lives in Chicago now, and she is very interested in the Detroit-style places that are popping up around the United States and around the world, frankly. And, you know, she found me, I guess, as many would, on the internet, and decided to reach out to me. And we had a great conversation about, you know, about our pizza. And it really is, I mean, from Food Network's perspective, she said her editor, you know, really wasn't that familiar with Detroit-style pizza. But when she told her editor the story about how many of them are popping up, and, you know, we've got them now in Brooklyn and Manhattan, and she said one just opened by her in Chicago, and okay. And then you've got Louie's here in Louisville, you know, Telluride, Colorado, Denver, Austin. I mean, they're popping up everywhere. It is the new, you know, it's the next big thing.
The new big thing.
You know, we're a few years ahead of the curve, but I really hope that, you know, between the press that they're going to give it, and, you know, just the good job that I think we're doing here every day, people will get it.
Well, what do you think? I mean, you always ask a restaurateur this. You know, you've been here a few years and seem to have everything going the way you want it to go. Where's the next Louie's?
Man, I would love to be I'd love to have a bigger spot over in the Highlands or in the Clifton area, maybe Nulu, but, you know, I don't have my sights set on anything right now. It's just it's going to be facts and circumstances based when it happens.
Okay. Well, I want to go back to, just for a second, because I come up here all the time. You know, you're not you don't have the typical career path of a guy that runs a restaurant.
Correct. Correct.
You have what I think you described as a really boring job before you got into all this. Right?
Well, I don't know how boring, but, you know, I was the chief information officer for a public company, and before that I was an information technology director also for a big public company, and then I'm a CPA, and so I was director of accounting before that, and came up through the you know, the public accounting path. So, but I'll tell you what I put on my personal business card, in addition to all those skills that I have, is I consider myself to be a culinary arts enthusiast, much like you. So, you know, you eat out a lot, you cook a lot, you experiment, you watch a lot of TV, you read a lot. You can learn a lot, even though you don't have the formal training. And you know, so I like to say that, you know, every job I ever had and everything that I've done in my life, from playing music to, you know, becoming good at accounting and technology and cooking, has led me right here.
Okay.
You know, it's prepared me for this job, which is, you know, it's the best and worst job I've ever had in my life. It's good and terrible.
Yeah, well, you know, there's frustrations in anything that that you do, and even the most successful people, you get frustrated. So, but overcoming that and running this place, I mean, you know, being a life, not a lifelong, I've lived in J-Town a long, long time, and certainly it's something that adds to the distinct neighborhood feel here. And
we're really trying to get some other restaurants to come out here, because I think, you know, just like Detroit style pizza is the next big thing in pizza. I think J-Town is the next big thing in Louisville areas where, you know, food, drink, entertainment, there are a lot of little environments or neighborhoods where people tend to congregate, and I think this is the next big one.
So I think the answer to this question is obvious, but obviously out here within a mile of here, there's a new brewery.
Yeah, they're good friends of ours, Third Turn Brewery. Yep, we deliver over there, the only place we deliver, but we deliver our food over there.
Because they don't have a kitchen, so that works out. You got Rec Bar kind of across the street.
Yep, and they're doing well.
And a couple of businesses on the square. So, I mean, I guess it's that old all boats rise, right?
Yeah. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of property out here that, you know, would make a good location for another bar or restaurant. And, you know, while some people would see that as maybe a threat, I see that as an opportunity.
Yeah.
Because I think the more things that there are, that, you know, it's going to draw more people to the neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, I've, you know, you've experimented, you and the city of J-Town, I guess, have experimented with events like pub crawls and walks and all that. You think that's going to continue?
Yeah. Actually, you know, we were trying to get everybody organized to do a Third Friday kind of a concept, and that's still on the table. We just need to do a little bit more from an organization and publicity standpoint. But the city is behind us, and you know, keep your eyes open, because there's going to be more of those kind of things happening. I mean, it's been a really, really good time with live music and giveaways and drink specials and just a lot of people walking around on the square. It's a really good time.
Excuse me, garçon. I'll have another.
All right, Steve and I are back in the studio, the Louisville.am studio, and glad to be here. I tell you, if you just listened to the interview with Mike Spurlock, he told me about a new menu item. They've got a low-carb Detroit-style pizza. You think that's possible, Steve?
Yeah, I forgot how they make those crusts. I mean, they're basically, you know, they're sugar-free. It's been so long since I even covered that business, but nobody ever tends to like the low carb stuff. You know, it's a novelty. So
yeah, well, it's a new thing.
I hope it works well.
Yeah, I'm going to go out and try it one of these nights, because I can walk there from my house. So that's a deal. So
well, if you go low carb, you could drive and just save the calories.
Yeah, save the calories. I need to run is what I need to do from the health club. But all right, this is our everybody's favorite part of the show. It's the Rick and Steve's favorite eats and drinks. And Steve, I guess we'll start with this. We're coming back to this tequila, but tell me about it.
So I got to enjoy some Muchote tequila. And the reposado is made by, well, actually, it's owned by a guy named Will Alger, who is our guest later we'll talk about. And reposado is, there's a 7 months old, I believe. It's just a fantastic sipper. I like it neat. I tried it in a cocktail, and it was fine, but I thought it was better neat. And Will will talk about how we drink those things neat and why we should drink them more and why it deserves a place on the stage with bourbon, and I totally agree. Well, good stuff. It just came to the market. I think you can find it at Total Wine for sure.
I'm going to try some because the only tequila I've ever had went with a salt and a lemon.
So. Ugh. Nasty.
It is. That's the stuff that makes you get sick. But
oh, yeah, and the old Forrester birthday bourbon. I didn't get a bottle of it anywhere, but I had two pours of it at Equus on Friday night. Fantastic. Still the best bourbon that old Forrester produces, at least for my palate. And, man, is it good.
Party up, party up. Well, we had a business meeting yesterday downtown at Against the Grain. I had this Pilsner beer that was at the top of the list, so I said, I'll take I'm easily marketed to.
So easily so that he can't remember the name of the Pilsner.
Yeah, that's right. I said, number one, I said. And so, but it's great. You know, Against the Grain's a great, great place. It's amazing how many beers they have down there. And it was a great afternoon.
Oh, sitting outside, yeah, having a business meeting with beer. That's always good stuff.
That's all good. Okay, so we had a lot of fun eating, of course. You have a ham?
I'm selfish this week and going to talk about the two-year-old prosciutto that I cured myself.
Wow.
So it is fantastic. And people think, how do you keep a piece of meat edible for 2 years? Well, you cure it with salt, and you keep it cold, and you sometimes hang it out to dry, and blah, blah, blah. There's a lot that goes into it, as you could find out in my book, Country Ham, A Southern Tradition of Hog Salt and Smoke, available at stevecoombs.com. But the funny thing was, we moved from Goshen to Louisville last year. We moved that, so the ham started out in Goshen, got moved to my condo in Louisville, got moved out to a smokehouse in Brooks, and back to Louisville, and back out to the smokehouse. The thing didn't move that much when it was on the pig, but it's delicious. But
the travel wears well. Well, that's good. And you joke, but you know, you've written this great book about hams. We should
stuff's
it,
coming so. Back. It pairs exceptionally well with bourbon and Copper and King's brandy. In December, we're doing a class on how to do that, and it's going to finish with cocktail pairings with ham.
Ah.
It will be great.
Sign me up. Sign me up. That sounds good. I'm going to go.
I know a guy who will let you in.
Yeah. Well, my favorite eat, I think, is what we just had for lunch, a nice sandwich over there at Red Hog. It was tasty.
Would you like me to describe it?
Please, because you know I can't.
It's pork confit, which confit means with fat, and covered with fat to preserve it was a way that's been done for centuries. And they take it, and what they do is take the fat layer that was the barrier between the air and the meat, and they mush it all together. And it's just like it's a velvety spread that goes on the meat. And there's like a red pepper jelly. And
yeah, the red pepper jelly was good, and a little bit of a sort of a cheesy thing. And, you know, I couldn't describe it all, but it was great. It went down great, and it hit the spot for lunch. So
indeed.
I would certainly recommend anybody that gets a chance looking for a different kind of lunch place. Head over there to Red Hog.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's good. So we can endorse that. All right.
So move on to our second guest.
First, let's mention again our sponsor, Eyecare Institute, over there on Story Avenue. They do all the procedures on your eyes, such as cataracts, glaucoma, LASIK, anything that you've got going on with your eyes, the Eyecare Institute. So, Steve, tell me about this guy, Will Alger, because I like his name.
So Will is an American, but he grew up in Cancun. His father was a hotelier there, and so he and his brother loved it there, fell in love with the country, and eventually bought a tequila brand called Muchote, which we mentioned a couple of minutes ago. They've owned it for about 10 years. They have really worked to sell it in the western half of the country, and now it is penetrating the eastern half. And he talks about why, you know, tequila deserves more respect, why it should be drunk a certain way, as opposed to, like you said, the shot with the lemon and lime.
Don't
and
do that.
Salt, blech. And eventually he and I are going to get together and do food pairing and tequila sometime down the road. So listen in. It's an interesting perspective from a really interesting guy who articulates the gospel according to tequila rather well.
an example of all the cool things you learn listening here to Eat, Drink, Talk every week on the Louisville.am network. I encourage you to tell your friends about it. We have got some big news coming up in the near future.
Yes, we do.
It's big stuff. Dun, so dun, dun. We'll keep you in the dark on that for at least one more week. But anyway, enjoy the interview with Will Alger, and Steve and I will return with a brand new episode next week.
Hey, I'm Dan Vonderhyde.
I'm Stephanie White.
We host a weekly podcast called
40-ish.
It's a show about life at middle age.
I'm not 40 yet.
Well, you're getting there eventually.
I guess.
So each week we talk about something that applies to the life of a middle-aged person. We drop a little bit of wisdom in every episode, and we go out and talk to people about their experiences.
And we laugh.
And we laugh a lot. It comes out every Tuesday. Make sure you download.
Tune in.
My guest this week on Eat, Drink, Talk is Will Alger, co-founder of the Mochote Tequila brand. He lives here in Louisville. His brother is in Denver. Is that right?
Correct.
But their product is from tequila, of course.
Los Altos, Jalisco, right there in, yep.
Well, in Jalisco, the state in Mexico. Awesome. Tell me a little bit about the brand and how you got into tequila.
The brand Mochote Tequila came as a result of my twin brother working for a liquor brand and then myself working for a different brand. And after about 10 years of working for these other liquor brands, we decided, how tough could it be? We were both born and raised in Mexico. We grew up in Mexico. We knew we had friends that had distilleries in Mexico. And we said, well, how tough could it be to come out with your own tequila? But we wanted to do something different. So the name Mucho, which everybody knows, and the name Mochote, which is instead of mucho, which means a lot, Mochote means a whole lot more. We figured, yeah, let's put everything into this thing. Let's come out with the best tequila that we can. And we decided, silvers and Blanco tequilas were very popular. And so we said, you know what? Everybody's going to go from the Blancos to the Reposados. Let's be the best Reposado in the world. You know, there's no competition in the Reposado category. Let's be the best Reposado. We launched it, and right out of the gates, you know, winning gold medals and awards and highest editor rated on companies like tequila.net. I mean, just fantastic. And so the job was then getting people to go from the silver and the Blanco tequilas to the Reposados. And
so let's do a little tutorial here with this. Now, Blanco is not aged.
Correct.
It's just a crushed agave that's just fermented and distilled. And
it can be
a little bit like
flashed in and out of the barrel. Which Herradura does.
Right, I think a 45 day age. Yep. And then Reposado, which translates as rested, right?
Yep.
Age 2 to 11 months.
2 months to a year.
Two months to a year. Then Añejo is a year to 3 years.
Correct.
And then the extra Añejo is 3 to 5 years.
Correct.
Or three, any more.
Over 3 years, yeah.
So with so much Blanco in the market, that was competition for you guys to get people to step up to an aged tequila?
Well, in Mexico, the biggest category for tequila is Reposados. It, you know, goes well with food. It goes well with appetizers. It mixes well. There's, you know, just like Blanco, you have the pepper, the spice, the great
cinnamon note.
Oh, you have all those great things going on. But also, it's rested. It's Reposado. It's rested, so it softens it just a little bit, and you get a little bit of the oak, and you get some other sweetness coming from the barrel. So, bringing this product into the United States, we figured, everybody will be, you know, ready to graduate from Blancos and Silver, and they'll go into the Reposados. Mm-hmm. Still today, Silvers and Blancos are the number one selling tequilas. So
now,
our job is still just as tough 10 years ago as it is today.
Is that because we drink so much of it in cocktails?
It's because, you know, the vodka, the rum, the gin, the white spirits category has always been so hot in the United States. Until now, correct?
Until now, yay bourbon. Which, you know, bourbon contributes a whole lot to Reposado tequila because that's old cooperage from bourbon distilleries, sometimes scotch distilleries, which came from bourbon distilleries, usually.
Yep. A lot of those old barrels are all in Mexico, and they're being used for the aging of the tequilas.
And when you see them, as you have many times, I've gotten to go to Herradura and Casa Noble, and those barrel heads are warped. They get a rough ride down in the hot weather in Mexico.
They sure do. You know, they keep using them. If it's leaking or something, they'll start repairing them, and they will just keep using these barrels year after year.
So how long is your Reposado rested?
7 months in seasoned whiskey barrels.
How would you describe it? Now, you and I were talking before the interview started about I get a really nice, pleasant mineral character out of it in the finish. It's very balanced, it's not oak forward at all.
What we tried to do was, of course, bring out the best of the Blancos, which is that spice and that peppery and the cinnamon and everything we were talking about, and then try to get the best out of aged tequila, which you start getting the vanilla and the sweetness, and you almost get like a you almost salivate, like wanting more of it, you know, mm-hmm. because it is so clean, and that's what happens too. Of course, when you get into the añejos, which añejos are excellent tequilas, and then you get into the extra añejos, it takes on more and more of the barrel and less of the actual agave and the tequila plant itself. So the best thing about these reposados is they're so balanced, and mm-hmm. you get the best of everything.
Would you be mad if someone were caught drinking that in a cocktail? Absolutely not.
Lately, we've been doing Muchote Mules with the ginger beer, uh-huh. which are fantastic.
Oh, I still have to try that.
We do, of course, like the Orangina or the San Pellegrino orange, mm-hmm. and it just balances perfectly.
You're saying that over ice, right?
Just a shot of Muchote and then over ice with the Orangina. Of course, it makes a perfect organic margarita if you're using the agave nectar and the fresh lime juice. But, you know, I've seen people drink Muchote and cranberry juice, and they love it. It mixes very
however it makes them happy, right? However. As long as they're buying it.
Exactly.
How well is good tequila accepted in Louisville bars and restaurants? Is it still a hard sell, or do you see some promise now? Is it moving more product?
Well, I think that's exactly what's happening. Thanks to bourbon getting so popular now, people are starting to transition from the vodka, gin, rum, clear spirits, and Blanco and silver tequilas to mezcals, to bourbons, to scotches, you know. So, I mean, this winter, I think it's going to be just amazing to see what happens with reposado tequilas and the rest of these brown spirits.
And this is a new market for Muchote, is that correct?
Muchote just got into Kentucky, absolutely. RNDC is carrying us. So
where beside Total Wine can people find this?
Total Wine, pretty much all of the larger stores, liquor barns, and then, strange thing, we were over at an Italian restaurant last night. They have it.
At Villari.
At Villari,
right?
Correct.
Yeah, that's great.
So it's not just for the Mexican restaurants. Tequila's getting so popular, you can have it at no matter where you're. And
that's such an incredible cocktail bar to begin with. I mean, you don't even have to go through Chef Joshua Moore's fantastic Italian food. You just go right to the bar and have a heck of a good time. I always go to tequila sections at local liquor stores, and I see a real mixed bag, and Westport Whiskey and Wine seems to have the most diverse offerings. Is there a particular store that you frequent to check out your competition?
I think, everybody's starting to add to their tequila selection, but I think the thing to remember is look at the gnomes, see kind of what...
Tell them what that acronym means.
Well, it's actually almost like the license plate for the distillery.
It's like the DSP.
Exactly.
Here.
So
yeah.
So basically, you'll have 75, 80 distilleries in Mexico, and thousands of tequilas are produced out of these. But what's going on is you might have a liquor store that might be heavy on one gnome. You know, mm-hmm. they might be heavy on our gnome is 1414, but it's such a small distillery they don't make a ton of different tequila brands. So more than likely you're not going to find another 1414 at a liquor store here in Kentucky.
Aren't there something like 950 tequila brands and only 350 bourbons, I think?
It's
a bunch.
I lose track, but yeah, there's more and more.
Because they never had prohibition. They just kept on making liquor.
I was just out in California talking to a distiller, and he's launching four new brands, so they keep coming out. Tequila's more popular than ever.
Well, so where did the ridiculous notion of, salt and shooting tequila and licking salt off your thumb and falling with the lime ever come from? Any idea? You grew up in Mexico. You probably didn't see it that much, did you?
Well, no, we didn't see it because Mexico held on to all the good tequila, and they'd export all the mixto tequila.
Right.
So all the gold tequila, which is, of course,
caramel color,
51-49. Yeah, it's 50. Yeah,
51% actual agave spirits. All right.
Well, it's 51% agave, yeah, 49% neutral grain spirits, and then caramel coloring and other stuff. So
and sugar and stuff that makes your head hurt. Like
exactly. You'll get a nice hangover. And the thing is now it's almost, with the price of sugar and with the price of of distilling products, it's almost more expensive to make a gold tequila now than it is just 100% blue agave tequila. So that's why you don't see a lot of the gold tequilas anymore. It's just as easy to make 100% blue agave.
Which is, it's 100% better, at least.
Yeah, which is a great thing for everybody.
So I know, as do you, that it's fantastic sipped straight, but a lot of people, again, aren't familiar with it like that. They've shot it straight, possibly, but they're comfortable sipping bourbon straight or scotch. How do you convince them to do a neat tequila tasting?
The best thing to do, especially with reposados, is do it with something you like eating, like do some chips and salsa with it, or do, I mean, it's always nice to enjoy tequila with the foods that you like eating. And it does go with everything. I mean, if you like Indian food, if you like some spicy Indian food or Mexican food.
I bet that will jack up the heat.
it really does go with a lot of different cuisines.
I do my own country hams here, you know, hillbilly prosciutto. And it pairs exceptionally well with tequila,
it or not. I bet. The sweetness, sure.
Well, the fattiness, it really cuts through and is a nice palate cleanser. And you and I have talked about that. We may do a food pairing with Muchote somewhere in Louisville at one point. I think it'd be fantastic. Will Elder, thanks for sharing some time with us today on Eat Free Talk.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
If you just can't get enough, catch up on the news of the city's restaurant scene every single day by visiting www.eatdrinktalk.net. Steve and Rick share all the latest local scoop from Louisville's restaurants and bars. You can also find old episodes of the show and connect with the guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Eat well, my friends. Another episode next week.